Right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast episode 11.
Wow, 1-1.
I know. It's almost like deja vu all over again.
from last week?
I guess so. Last week, last time, last... Oh, I don't know. I'm just glad we're here. How are you doing, sir?
Doing a little tired, to be quite honest. I had myself a little movie marathon last night to kind of wrap up my Oscar viewing movie thing I had going on. I've watched every movie now. So, yeah, so it's good. I watched Hitchcock, Snow White and the Huntsman, which is nominated for special effects, Amour. Actually, I ended the evening with Amour, and it took me a little while to go to bed, and which is why I'm not making sense right now. So I'm just gonna stop talking. How is you doing?
Well, I be doing good. I've been good. got to see my first official pre-screening since starting the show. So that's been kind of fun. And let's see. Other than that, yes, also like you, been watching the movies and stuff. I have not seen every Oscar-nominated movie, but I have seen all 9 that are nominated for Best Picture. And like you, I completed my viewing today with Amour and Beasts of the Southern Wild. So that was a long day for me.
A very depressing day for you.
Yeah, I think we'll get into... Yeah, I mean, we already covered Beasts of Southern Wild. We did that a couple weeks ago, but... Yeah, we'll get into it more when it's time to get into the movies. Suffice it to say, I wasn't really depressed by that movie.
Amour or Beasts?
Neither. Mainly because of the way they're presented.
Yeah,
which is kind of interesting. Because with Beasts of Southern Wild, it's kind of a mashup of kind of like fantasy meets drama, kind of like a almost like a fantasy drama kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
Which is a really very interesting way to do it and everything. I just, for me, it felt like it was trying to loop a little too hard on the fanciful side, so that kind of took me out of the drama side of it. So I can appreciate it, and I do know why that girl has been nominated. So she definitely did a great job. With Amour for me, and we'll get into this later on a little bit deeper, I'm sure, but for me, Amour is a cautionary tale in be careful what you wish for, and I'll explain that when we get there. So, since other than that, just been kind of normal retinue of items and things that we do normally, so, you know, school, work, whatever. So I guess if you want, we can just jump right into news.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, let's see here. It turns out that this has been a very busy week for Harrison Ford, depending on who you talk to this last week. Back on February 15th, as reported by Ain't It Cool News, apparently Episode 7 will have Harrison Ford coming back as Han Solo. And their source was Latino Review. But the reason
which, for some reason, Latino Review has like the best coverage when it comes to Star Wars,
and that's interesting because that is exactly what they say here from Ain't It Cool News. They say, quote, according to El Mayembe over at Latino Review, who has an exceptional batting average when it comes to his scoop accuracy, the deal is done for Harrison Ford to reprise his role as Han Solo in Star Wars Episode 7, end quote. So, even they are noting how good that they are over there at Latino Review. That being said, you know, of course, this definitely sparked the internet ablaze with fanboys and just general interest people because, let's face it, Ford is getting into his 70s now. So, this will be interesting to see how they fit him in. So I would like to see that. However, because the internet was so set fire, cosmicbooknews.com came back and said that, oh wait, Harrison Ford not signed on to Star Wars. So they come in, and this was Ain't It Cool News came in on February 15th. Cosmic Book News came in on February 16th, and they say, remember the big scoop that hit this week about confirming Harrison Ford has signed on to the new Star Wars? You know, not confirming with, you know, Disney, but so apparently Harrison Ford might not be signed on to the new Star Wars after all. They said that EW's Jeff Boucher tweeted the following. Harrison Ford deal? My source says not yet. It will not be for weeks and perhaps months. So they're coming back and saying that Disney could be trying to cover the keisters on this one. But
yeah, but who knows what the source is? It could be the kitchen chef at the commissary.
True.
We know.
True. However, I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. So I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah,
but I just
yeah.
think it's pretty interesting. So the unofficial official is that he's doing it. I'm going to fall into the camp of he's doing it. I'm also going to fall into the camp of I'd like to see him do it. So I think that if all of them, if everybody's still alive at the time of filming, I hope that everybody gets some kind of role. I think especially with J.J. Abrams at the wheel, they'll have a way to tastefully give them cameos. So, and make it something that fans will appreciate, old and new. So I'm for that. Furthering my Star Wars news and people who want to come back, turns out that John Williams wants to return for the new Star Wars trilogy. And there is a new report, and it comes from the John Williams Fan Network.
Of course, that's appropriate. It has to come from the John Williams Fan Network.
Yes, so this is what we have. And here's the quote. We're about to play Star Wars. Audience interrupts with cheers. And each time we play it, I'm reminded of the first time we played it decades ago. Neither I, nor George, nor anyone else involved thought this would go far, or in a few years there would be a sequel, and I'd have to revisit the themes. And years later, another trilogy. Now we're hearing of a new set of movies coming in 2015, 2016, so I need to make sure I'm still ready to go in a few years for what I hope would be continued life with George. Now, based off this quote, it does sound like for sure he is interested in doing it, but it sounds like he's interested in doing it with one person who's not going to be doing it.
Yeah.
That would be George Lucas.
Yeah.
So, given that his wish, I hope we get ours and that he comes back, because he is truly a unique cinematic voice, and even though you never hear him speak in the movies.
Yeah,
so,
and if they have to bring somebody on to score the movies, I mean, they're only going to be copying him for the most part. I mean,
yeah.
You cannot not get rid of that, you know, just the sound of it. Star Wars has that sound, you know, whether if you watch the cartoon version or watch, you know, any of the movies. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, you have to have him.
I think so. So I'm hoping he comes back as well. And then shifting gears, some video game related news to movies, because, you know, sometimes it's not always just about the movies themselves. Earlier this year we wanted to talk about kind of maybe playing with a segment of having an essay every once in a while, or maybe a segment about, you know, should they make this movie, should they have a reboot or what have you. And I actually found something that I thought was pretty cool, that I thought would be really interesting to read. And it turns out there was a list from UGO.com about 11 video games that will never ever become movies, we hope. On this list, we have Gran Turismo, which, let's face it, they already did Days of Thunder. So it could be argued that Gran Turismo is just basically a movie version of that. Or if you want to say that it's various sport type cars, then I guess every time they've ever done a Fast and Furious video, movie, that there you go. Fallout, although there has been there's always been whispers that that could be turned into a movie. Boogerman. Yes, there was actually a video game called Boogerman.
Boogerman?
Yes. Arachnoid. Oh, yes, the old gaming's, you know, we're going classic gaming on that there.
That just has a classic, like, name to it.
Yeah,
coming absolutely. Soon, Arachnoid.
I just...
Boogerman.
I don't know, I wonder if Dan Aykroyd would have a problem with that. So I don't know if Dan Aykroyd would have a problem with that. They had Mass Effect, which I don't know that you know, given the fact that it's so popular, I could see how someone would try. Although I like their little quote here. It says, "I've already seen something with weirdly religious overtones about a handsome shepherd. It's called the Bible." let's see here. Siphon Filter was a great gaming franchise as well. But I also like what they said here about it. "Look, as bad as I want to see people get set on fire by tasers, I just don't trust Hollywood to pull it off without ruining it with quick cuts, close-up, or Jake Gyllenhaal." Legend of Zelda movie. Tekken movie.
Tekken. And
yes, I'm pretty sure that after the Street Fighter debacle, they won't ever do that again.
Yeah. Tekken.
Yeah, Nuts and Milk. I've never even heard of that game, but apparently it's it's a Donkey Kong retread, so I have no idea.
Nuts and Milk.
And then last but not least, we have Braid, which is one of the best independent games of 2008, 2009. But unfortunately, the plot is so ethereal that I don't think there'd be a way to make a movie out of it. Number one on the list of games, of video games that will never ever become movies, we hope, Super Mario Brothers.
There you go.
That's right.
They already did that.
That's right. And the caption reads, number one, Super Mario Brothers. Why would anyone want to make this into a... Oh.
That movie was kind of like a staple in, you know, in my childhood. Like, everybody my age saw that movie, and we were obsessed with it.
I watched it, and I was like, holy crap, what a terrible movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then finally, we have actually pretty decent video games based on movies. We've got Aladdin on this list. This is a list of 25, so we're not going to read through the whole thing. But, you know, Aladdin made this list. King Kong made the list here. Some good stuff. Ghostbusters, which was a really good game. For people who were fans of that franchise and really wanted to see another one made, Ghostbusters, the video game, was kind of like a spiritual successor, almost like a third movie.
That just came out recently, didn't it? Like a years ago?
It came out in 2008 or 2009.
Yeah.
It's been a few years. But the best part was they got all the people to come back to do the voice acting for it. So that was really cool. You know, Toy Story 3 was actually on this, is on the list as well. Scarface, something that was interesting to me, Blade Runner is on this list. And this was one of the few games that in the burst of late 90s multimedia frenetic action that they tried to do with all the computer games. This is one of the few that actually really came to fruition as a good game. Very solid game. It also came with 12 different enemies. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's Blade Runner. It's set in the Blade Runner universe, but not with the original character. So it was able to inhabit its own story. And that also made it really cool as well.
So there's no naked snake lady dance?
Maybe in the background.
That's what I miss about those games. Like, in the background, like, you played Duke Nukem. As he walks around, you're like in a strip club, but you know the people are stripping or dancing in the background, but it's like the gyrating, you know, just really quick moving around. It's not like a fluid, you know, chick dancing or people dancing.
Yeah, kind of like the Grand Theft Auto Vice City way that they danced.
Oh, I don't know, I don't remember. I didn't play that game.
That one's hilarious. There's actually a strip club you can go in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Let's see here. Willow also made this list.
Willow!
Yeah. Let's see here. The original Tron Arcade made this list. The Die Hard trilogy for PlayStation 1. I was really surprised to see this on here, but it was a good, it was a fun port.
You had a gun, right? Like, you had to use your own gun? Was that it? Or...
Well, no, it was, I mean, it was just three games on one disc, and you didn't have, I mean, there were no peripherals for it, you just used a controller. Okay. You had a first-person shooter, a rail shooter, and vehicle-based driving on the third one. Super Star Wars is on here. Oh, God, that game was so hard. Jurassic Park Operation Genesis, which is interesting. The Thing also made this list.
Yeah, I played The Thing. Talk about a creepy game.
Batman for the NES, and I had that game when I was a kid. And I will say this. It really was well done based on the movie. What it was a great use of the franchise. And, God, was it so fucking hard. It was so hard. So there was that. The Warriors, which is, again, Rockstar. So, of course, Rockstar is going to make a good movie. Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay. That was something that people questioned quite heavily, especially once they found out that Vin Diesel was so involved in the production of the video game, because they didn't realize that he truly is, he loves gaming and stuff. So yeah. They were really questioning it, but it came out really, really well. And they actually did a, they've actually done a current gen version of it. So
yeah, I know they're making a new Riddick movie right now.
Yeah. So maybe we'll get another great game out of that too. But the number one list of pretty decent video games based on movies, GoldenEye for the 64.
Classic.
That is like the number one. It was basically the game that introduced the first-person shooter genre. You
know, oh yeah,
that
definitely.
Is like the grandfather of it. So
when that was like the number one, like when N64 came out, that was one of the Super Mario or the Mario 64 game.
Yeah,
I think those two were the ones that really catapulted.
Yeah, this
the
is
console.
Pretty much the game that defined the 64. So even more so, I would venture to say, than Mario 64. So that's it. That's my news. Just wanted to share some interesting, fun stuff, both movie and video game, combining two passions.
All right, and with me, I just have a few things. If anybody watches SNL still, every once in a while they have gems that of skits that they do. And last week, Christoph Waltz was guest hosting, and they did this. I guess it was their little multimedia digital shorts that they do. And this was a new Quentin Tarantino movie called DeJesus, or just Jesus Uncrossed, where. He was actually, Christoph Waltz was Jesus Christ, or Jesus, but the D is silent, you know, kind of the playoff of Django Unchained. It's really funny, just really ridiculous. They even have some of the Quentin Tarantino random violence of, I think, like a head splits open. And it's just really ridiculous. You got to check it out. He just walks around with a giant cross on his back. You can find it online on Hulu, especially. They have it on there. Also, there's this movie called 21 and Over that I keep getting these sneak preview invites to go see it for, you know, and I don't even want to go see it for free. But it's another one of those, you know, college movies where I guess they're freshmen. One of them's an Asian kid. The other one are two white guys. They're trying to be cool and go party with all the cool people and whatnot. And it's just a movie about, you know, college debauchery and just drinking and just going crazy and trying to get laid. However, movies like this don't really sit too well in the Asian market, and since I guess the main character is the Asian kid who practically through the entire movie he is off the wall drunk and just passed out or just jumping off buildings and just being incredibly profane, they needed to clean it up and maybe change the whole tone of the movie as well as the message of the movie, something more suitable for the Asian movie goer. And what they did is something that is so ridiculous that I've got to watch both versions, because it's crazy, because they changed the entire movie. So whereas with the American version, where it's say Animal House meets The Hangover meets any other crappy movie. Well, Animal House is great, but any really, you know, just over the top sex comedy party movie, they needed to change it. So what they did is that they took that story, but they added another message to it. And what the studio did is that after they finished shooting over here in America, they went over for however many days to Asia to film some additional scenes. And now I'm quoting from the Los Angeles Times, 21 and over in China is a sort of a story about a boy who leaves China, gets corrupted by our wayward Western parting ways, and goes back to China a better person. What the hell? It's crazy. I mean, what does it say about the movie? Like, what does it say about having respect for any movie? I mean, well, a lot of astute filmmakers and people that are like even Quentin Tarantino, they don't cut a lot out of their movies. I mean, what they have in the movie is their movie. If the movie's going to be 2.5 to 3 hours long, who cares? They're not going to cut it down because they believe this is how the movie should be seen. They don't back down for other countries. I mean, I realize this is kind of like a marketing ploy, but what's the point of making a movie and trying to make a decent movie when you just have to redo it for it to cater other people just to make more money? Well, I guess the answer would be that this is just, you know, a crappy movie. I mean, it's got to be a really shitty movie. And I really can't think of any other movie. I mean, there might have been that have been kind of retorted for another mass market, which is, you know, like the Chinese populace, which is kind of what, you know, what every movie studio executive, that's the market that they really want to tap in.
Well, okay, so, but what about when, what about with, Gangster Squad? I mean, what's the difference between kowtowing to people who might be afraid you're filming a scene that where people get shot in a theater versus, you know, well, we're going to change up the style of the movie so that people can see all the debauchery, but instead of it debauchery for debauchery's sake, you come back and learn something from it. What's the difference?
They change everything within the movie as well. Like they re-edit it so that the movie is not focusing on the debauchery, it's focusing on how corrupt we are here in America and how our lifestyle corrupts like the Asian, you know, the Asian community. Like this Asian kid, like, oh man, these two white guys are doing this to their Western who they think is a friend or who they call a friend. So it's a little bit different than just, I guess, getting like reshooting part of a movie because of what happened at the movie theater this past summer. You know, like they're not really changing the tone of the movie, or they're not changing the meaning of the movie. They just got rid of, you know, they just got rid of a scene, or they got rid of a few scenes and just kind of reworked it.
Okay.
So, yeah, 21 and over. Let's see how that one does at the box office. Next is Maggie Smith, Dame Maggie Smith. We all know her from, well, not maybe not we all, but a lot of women know her from Downton
Sister
Abbey.
Act?
Oh, yes, Sister Act as well. She was also, I first saw her in, was she in Clash of the Titans, the original one? She was one of the gods. And when she Athena?
You know what? I don't know. To be honest,
she was in one of those movies. But she's phenomenal, and especially in Downton Abbey, and I've been watching it with a girlfriend, and it's just a really good, well-made show, and she is hysterical, and she's won a lot of awards, been nominated for a lot of awards. And she was being interviewed on 60 Minutes, and apparently she has never seen one episode of Downton Abbey, which is kind of interesting in a way. And I don't know if it's because of, you know, she just doesn't want to see how her character is, just for her character's sake, or if maybe she just, you know, she knows it's good, obviously, because it's such a cult phenomenon, or maybe not a cult phenomenon, it's such a phenomenon, period, that she just doesn't care.
Well, that or she lived it, so she probably knows what happens.
Well, exactly. Yeah. That's probably
that
as well.
It's not like what's-his-face that played Matthew. in the show. Are you all caught up, by the way? I don't want to do any spoilers.
No. I haven't run the last couple episodes of the second series.
So, yeah, the guy that plays Matthew on the show, he actually tweets as the shows are coming on and stuff. And he sits down and watches them. So he can tweet about it with his fans as they watch the show.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's pretty neat when they do that. I know a lot of news people are doing that as well.
Yeah, they call it, he calls it Dog's Bum Abbey Time.
Dog's Bum Abbey
Time?
Yeah,
because the opening shot of the credits is the dog sitting down.
Oh, okay.
So you see the dog's butt.
So you watch the show? I didn't know you were a Downton Abbey-ite.
Yeah, I'm such a fan that I saw everything before everybody in the States saw it. I watch it when it comes out in Britain.
do you just fly over to London and you just go to go to like a convenience store to sit there and watch?
I'm secretly rich, and yes, that's how I spend my millions.
Or do you party with Michelle Obama and just get all the episodes?
No, actually, I party with Maggie Smith, and that's why she hasn't ever watched any, because she sends me the episodes, so she never gets a chance to watch them. So she sends me the episodes so I can watch them ahead of time.
I would love to see like that scenario play out. Hello, Matt. I'm going to.
Yeah.
Peter. No, it's Matt.
Yeah, I do really watch the. I watch them online, and I watch them as soon as they come out.
They're,
you can get them as you can get them as early as 4 o'clock our time in the afternoon of the day that they air.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're 6 hours ahead.
Yeah.
So it comes on at like 9 o'clock at night, and they're usually available at 10 o'clock at night online for them. So it's 4 o'clock for us. So yeah, and of course, if you are, there are also programs out there that allow you to do cool things that can help you watch stuff. I'm not going to say anymore, but
legal things. Cool legal things.
I imagine it's legal. I'm not going to comment on the legality.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah,
no idea.
I don't know who's gonna see this or hear this. So
no idea.
But I will say that like the series didn't air until January here on PBS, and
the last episode came out
of Christmas. Yeah.
Oh wow. Well,
because the show ran from September through
Christmas Eve,
November,
I think.
And
oh, okay.
Then it goes away for a month and comes back for the Christmas special, which they air on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And so I was caught up after Christmas Day.
Wow, man, you are up to snap with Downton Abbey.
Yes, sir. That's why
I didn't
spoil anything for you.
Well, good. No, I appreciate it. I would be pissed. Pissed. Now, in other news, the special effects house, Rhythm and Hues, which I believe they worked on The Life of Pi, which they are nominated for an Academy Award for visual effects, which makes the story kind of crazy. They are actually bankrupt. They filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and they had to fire 250 of its 1,400 employees, which is a really huge cut in their workforce there. And a judge recently ruled that I guess it's Universal Studios and Fox, 20th Century Fox, are going to be paying them. He approved loans from those companies to help keep this visual effects house, Rhythm and Hues, up to speed so they can actually finish doing the special effects for Universal and Fox movies. So, but yeah, man, $17 million. That's what the judge approved. $17 million in loans. That's crazy. I mean, it's bizarre. Like, how do you spend that much money when you're at a visual effects house? I mean, it's, I guess, bills pile up. You know, you have to get a green screen on loan, like a motion capture suit on loan.
It's,
I guess,
computers. Honestly,
right.
I mean, that's what it is. It's the processing power that is needed to render graphics is unreal. A lot of the basic stuff that you see is, you know, $100,000 worth of rendering hardware and software. If you want to see, if you really want to see the money that goes into it, go look at a behind the scenes on a Pixar movie. and they'll show you, and you see in the behind the scenes, and you'll see the big, huge render man machine and stuff like that. It's like a $20 million machine. So I can see it's just computers, man. The wave of the future. Technology.
Computers.
Binary solo. 00000001. 00000001.
Fly the Conchords?
Yes, sir.
You are. What's it? How's that song go?
It's
the human
in the distant future. The year.
The humans are dead. The humans are dead. Well, that's all I got. You know, I think I'm going to save my last story for next week, just because.
Well, awesome. Then let's jump straight into Three Squared. And this week's Three Squared was going to be all about presidential movies. So movies that were about a president or about the presidency, about a particular president, fictional scenarios or what have you. So just any kind of movie that you felt was a great presidential flick. And I guess I'll just jump right in here. My three picks, in order of how much I like them, are number one, Dave. Which is a 1993 comedy drama film. It's directed by Ivan Reitman and stars Kevin Kline, Sigourney Weaver, Franklin Langella, Kevin Dunn, Ving Rhames. And this is Ving Rhames in one of his earlier roles. It was about this, I want to say it was either right before or right after Pulp Fiction launched him into the spotlight. Ben Kingsley also has a small role in this movie. And basically, This nice guy named Dave, played by Kevin Kline, he just runs a temp agency, and he happens to have a striking resemblance to the president. And so, through a series of misadventures and of unfortunate events, he ends up being the president. Or at least playing him on TV, as they say. And it's just really great. It gives you a great window into how our government works and tells a great little love story on the side and is kind of lighthearted but knows how to take itself seriously at the same time and just comes together in a great way. And I really, really like it. It was one of the first films that I ever watched that made me want to get a little bit more involved in politics. Which is kind of weird because that's not the point of the movie, but that's still what it did for me. So, highly recommend that one. Second, the last two movies are actually about presidents. They're biopics on presidents. The first one is a 1995 HBO movie. It's called Truman, and it is based on David McCullough's book, Truman, and it stars Gary Sinise as Truman. And basically, it goes from the time he is a farmer and ends up right before he gets into the war, and then it's almost by accident how these things keep happening to him, but he refuses to back down and he always takes the challenge head on, and whatever challenge is presented to him, he overcomes the obstacle in the weirdest way and then is elevated because of it. So he goes into the army at like the age of 27, you know, and takes a headlong charge. He can't get his guys to respect him. Ends up taking a headlong charge into, I can't remember if it was by mistake or not, but into the enemy. Ends up taking them all out. Doesn't even get scratched. So now they think he's a lucky charm. And then he gets promoted. He gets back home, stumbles into politics, ends up going all the way to like the Senate and everything. Gets berated by then President Roosevelt, FDR, to be his VP. And so he's, okay, well, I mean, if I have to do it, I guess I... Because he didn't want to even be vice president. He didn't think he was qualified. He gets yelled at by FDR and goes and finally accepts the nomination and then finds himself as the President of the United States.
Yeah, I've never saw it. I didn't see that one. I'll check it out. You said it's HBO?
It's a really good movie. It really is. It's a really good movie. Puts a lot of perspective on it and kind of shows you how politics worked back then. It goes into the dark side of politics. as well. And you'll see, it's kind of funny, especially for those who follow politics today, just how little of it has really changed. And so, again, great movie. You'll want to check that out. Last but not least is going to be Nixon, which is the Oliver Stone biopic. Aside from choosing Anthony Hopkins to play Nixon, I thought it was a good movie.
Is that your favorite Oliver Stone movie?
I don't know. I would have to say I think Natural Born Killers is probably better to me than Nixon. Nixon would probably be second. Natural Born Killers would be my first.
Okay.
And then after Nixon, I'd say Platoon. And then that's really about it. I've seen his other movies. Don't particularly care.
Okay.
If that's... that fair, I guess. I don't
know. Well, I mean, to each their own. Especially when it comes to a director like him. I mean, you know, either some people like a few things he did, or a lot of people either love him or they hate him. So.
Yeah. He did Scarface too. He wrote Scarface. I liked Scarface, but then again, that's Brian.
Did you ever see W?
I'm sorry?
W? His George W. Bush movie?
No. No, I pretty much just refuse to watch anything on George W. Bush because I can't fathom anybody giving him a fair shake. So
I would watch that if it ever comes on, because it actually gives him, it's pretty damn fair, like it's a really good movie.
I know your politics and what you consider fair and what I consider fair would probably be different.
Oh no, it's the same thing with even with Republicans watching it. That's what made the movie very interesting.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, like it chronicles talks about his relationship with him and his father, and how I guess he never won the movie. He really doesn't want to be going to politics. He really doesn't want to do anything, but because of his persisting father and his father wanting him to do all this, he kind of fell into it, or just decided to do it because of the popularity of the Bush name. He just kind of went up and up and up until he became president. And it kind of goes back and forth from the presidency to I guess him climbing to the top, or climbing up to become president. And when it goes to his presidency during 9/11, it just shows you how his relationship was with Condoleezza Rice, with what's his name? The villain, the henchman. He's like a henchman, but he wasn't, because he was the vice president of the United States. But he could have been a henchman if he really wanted to. I am drawing a blank. Anyways, it just
I'm sorry, I can't help you on this one.
Yeah. Damn it. Pacemaker Man.
Oh, Cheney.
Yeah, Dick Cheney. Yeah, I mean, it just shows how he was kind of influenced by whether to go one way or another. Like it showed his views, and it showed what the views that like Dick Cheney really wanted to imply on him and to be implemented on throughout his presidency. So it just kind of goes, it shows the struggle between the two and what happened, and it really sheds like good light on President Bush, former President Bush, and it shows him as a real person opposed to like a caricature or just a goofy character, because he does have a sentimental side, he does have a good head on his shoulders, and I mean I think that, and I have always thought that, and I do commend him for many of the things he's done during his presidency. So I think the movie did him justice for the most part.
Well, let's see here, I pulled it up on Wikipedia. says the website summarized the reviews of the film by calling it quote, a surprisingly sympathetic portrayal of the 43rd American president. W is fascinating in spots, but merely rudimentary as a whole. End quote. I guess we'll give it a shot.
Do you have on demand?
No, I don't have cable.
Okay, never mind.
If I can figure out a way to come across it, I will give it a shot. So maybe, you know. Well, no, I already said it once. No. Anyway, so now that we've winded our way back from the road of Oliver Stone, this is my last movie is Nixon, which again I was not impressed with his casting of Anthony Hopkins as Nixon, but okay, whatever. Whatever, it is what it is at this point. I do think that based on this movie, I think it gave a very even-handed approach to Nixon. He was obsessed with himself. He was obsessed with being the best president. And by accident, he really was one of the best presidents that we'd had. And the scandal of Watergate was his hubris at work. And yet... And that ended up swallowing his presidency whole. And it does a really good job of kind of showing how he came up, how he, and basically how he chose to deal with issues and stuff like that. I don't know. He really did do a lot of amazing things. He did end the war in Vietnam. He did keep the space program running when he could have shut it down. He did keep an open dialogue with Russia. He did negotiate trade with China. He, you know, there was a lot of things that he did, and yet everybody always remembers him for Watergate. So that's why I like it. I think it's a very, I think for me it was a pretty even-handed deal. Much the same way that you say about W. So I guess if he did it for Nixon, I suppose we could check it out. And there we go. That's my three squared, my three presidential films, Dave, Truman, and Nixon.
Already with mine, I so much wanted to choose Jefferson in Paris, the Nick Nolte as Thomas Jefferson movie, yet I did not. Instead, I chose another Nixon movie called Dick with Dan Hedaya. I would say Hedaya for some reason. Dan Hedaya, who played Richard Nixon. And it was basically about these two girls who were interns within the White House, which was played by Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams. And they basically were the ones who, within the movie, outed Richard Nixon for Watergate. And you also have Will Ferrell and I forgot who the other guy was, what were they? Bernstein. Somebody in Bernstein.
Woodward and Wilford? Bernstein.
Woodward and Bernstein. I would say Wilfred and Bernstein. there's Dick. My other movie is Air Force One with Harrison Ford, the Wolfgang Peterson movie about the president.
I gotta be honest, I totally forgot about that movie. That's a great movie.
I need to rewatch it. It has one of the best... bad guys or best character actors for a bad guy in it, and shit, Gary Oldman, thank you very much.
No problem.
He was in Fifth Element recently, Book of Eli, excellent actor. It's just a very cool movie, especially for 1997.
And let's not forget The Professional, which came out in 94 95. God, yeah. Talk about an amazing actor. That's some guy who literally doesn't play the same character twice. Well, let me rephrase that, because he did play Gordon three times. But you know what I mean. He's not a character actor. You know what I mean. He's a good actor. I like him. Keep going.
Yeah, exactly. In my third movie, I kind of have a tie for two, or a tie for third between two. Primary Colors, which is kind of... Mike Nicholas's you know, satirical look at the Bill Clinton presidency, and Deep Impact that came out in 98 about the meteorite.
Okay, who, explain to me. Is it just because
Morgan Freeman was president?
Morgan Freeman has such a prominent role in the movie?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's why I tied it with Primary Colors.
All
right, fair enough. I mean, but, you know, Primary Colors, I guess, is the main movie. I just like to give Deep Impact more, you know, I like to give it more publicity, because that movie kind of gets forgotten, I think.
That's because Armageddon was the better of the two movies.
Oh,
they
man,
both
I like,
are terrible. They're both terrible movies. But
I like
Armageddon
Deep Impact
is the better
lot.
Of the two.
See,
I
like
Deep Impact. It was okay. I watched them both. I watched Deep Impact first. I watched Armageddon. They're both not really all that great movies, but I think Armageddon is the better of the two. Clearly, you think Deep Impact is the better of the two. So that's okay. We hardly ever agree. So we can make that another show.
Hardly ever. We agreed last week. We've been agreeing. I know.
I guess next week, the showdown. 12 rounds. Armageddon or Deep Impact. The better film.
Hey, man, if I can find a copy of those somewhere, I will watch them and re-review. Because I don't think I've seen Deep Impact since 99 when it first came out on DVD.
I'm looking on Netflix right now, bro. Hang on, we're pulling it up. Let's see if we
the
got
Armageddon show.
It's on here. Deep Impact is on here, bro.
Really?
It is on instant viewing. Yes, sir. Let's see here. And then we have Armageddon.
If it's not, just listen to the Armageddon soundtrack and you'll get a gist of what the movie's like.
No, they don't have Armageddon on here. They just have Deep Impact.
But who can forget that one scene in Armageddon when they're all talking about the perks about going up in space and, you know, drilling into the comet or whatever. And they say, what's his name, asks him, like, what do you guys want out of this? And I think it was Bruce Willis looks at him and says, taxes. We don't want to pay any taxes ever.
Yeah.
I remember
like,
that
yeah,
one getting a pretty good laugh.
The guys have a few requests. They want to get like, okay. He's like, and, we don't want to pay any taxes. I'm like, well, I'm sure the IRS could probably figure out a way to make this like a gift or a charitable donation to your company. No. Ever. So, yeah, that was definitely pretty good. And I liked also Steve Buscemi with space sickness and all that kind of stuff. That was really kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, we can definitely figure out a way to watch Armageddon. I'm pretty sure if we looked hard enough, it'd probably be at the $5 bin.
Probably, because I don't want to miss a thing.
Walmart or something.
The ultimate colossal end of the world showdown.
Yeah.
Armageddon versus Deep Impact.
Tickets just $5.
$5
Sunday.
Sold at any Walmart or Kmart that is still standing.
There you go.
People in Russia get in free.
Indeed. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into the movies then. So our movies, we got Amour, Flight, and A Good Day to Die Hard. You also went and did,
Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina or something. So, you know what? Why don't you go ahead and tell us about Anna Karenina, and I'm gonna let you do that.
Alrighty. Well, Anna Karenina is based off a book by Leo Tolstoy, a Russian author, and the movie's had, I think, one other version back in the day, and I forget the actress who played her. It was a very popular movie when it did come out. It's a movie about this woman, Anna Karenina, who has a son. She also has a husband in Moscow. And she falls in love with this other guy, this other man. And it's basically about her love affair with this guy. And I think he's a younger guy. And the tragedy that basically consumes within Anna Karenina by the end of the movie that leads to her eventual, you know, death I guess. So it sounds like a very grim Russian movie. However, this movie is nothing but grim, and it's nothing but Russian, since I don't think there's one Russian actor or actress in the movie. It's all played by Brits. And I gotta say that this movie is visually entertaining. Incredibly entertaining. And the movie is nominated for Best Costumes as well as Best Cinematography at the Academy Awards. I just have a few key points of the movie that I just gotta say for those of you who have seen it and who have not. If you haven't seen it, I mean, honestly, it's worth giving a shot, basically for the visual feast. It has a love story in it. It has minimal dialogue towards the beginning because it's just kind of like the whole setup of it. I gotta say that at the beginning of the movie, when they're doing the whole setup, the plot and the characters, and it's the entire set is basically taking place within a theater. And as the set changes, you see people picking up the walls and bringing on another set, and the camera like moves around, and all of a sudden you're in a restaurant when beforehand you were in a bedroom or you were at a ball. And where the audience sits, they removed all the chairs, and there's a galley, a performance going on, or a party, a gala, a masquerade happening, or they even do a horse race where they somehow manage to do it within the confines of this theater where this entire thing is taking place. And how they use the scenery and or use the set piece and use the atmosphere within the theater using camera movements and characters and these interesting set transitions. Just, I mean, the feeling of it is kind of like that ride. I call it the Mixer ride. If you go to a theme park, go to a Six Flags theme park, the ride that you sit in, and it just kind of mixes you about, and you think you're going to hit somebody else in the other card, but you really don't. And that's kind of how you feel. You're it's not really jerky or, you know, just cutting back and forth like Moulin Rouge, I guess, is a way of comparing it to. Is another movie of comparing it to. You just kind of just mix around and just go one area, then back out, then move over to the right, then you're somewhere else. And it's just beautiful how the movie does it. However, that whole stylistic way of making this movie, doing this movie, which is directed by Joe Wright, which is the third movie he's done with Keira Knightley, it kind of overshadows the character and what's going on within the story. You have this very dreamy premise, this beautiful music, this beautiful color palette, which is soothing with the blues and the yellows. So it's very beautiful and very gorgeous. Just makes the look of the movie incredibly rich. But it takes away from the character depth that could have been there if the director kind of focused more on telling the story without relying on so many visual cues and too many ooh-wah type of moments. And there are a ton of moments in the movie within these visual cues, I guess, at the beginning, where it feels like they're going to break out into a song and dance at any moment, which is either a good thing, or it could be a bad thing if you're a fan of musicals, or if you're a really big fan of musicals and you just want them to stand out and break out into a big operatic Russian ballad. But they don't, unfortunately. This movie, if I could compare it to something else, would be the film Australia that came out a couple years ago with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman. It was a big epic set on the Australian outback during World War I. I don't want to call it a nostalgia movie, but it's a classic. The feeling of it is a very classic epic type of movie that you don't have those nowadays. You don't have those movies like Cleopatra or Ben-Hur, where you have excellent characters and excellent storyline. I mean, I guess Gladiator would be a good one to look at, but you just really don't have those anymore, you know, without there being a ton of sex or a ton of violence, where the violence kind of takes the forefront, which brings in, you know, the money, brings in the guys want to see that. But this movie is a throwback to the feel-good type of movie, and I hate saying the word throwback, because this is actually a well-done movie, and the feeling of it is true to what the story encompasses. And that's what I really like about the movie. I mean, yeah, it's a big visual treat, and that's, in many people's opinion, that's all that it is, but it's just really, really visually engrossing movie, and I found a lot of heart in it. I found a lot of characterization in it, and I was moved by the tragedy that happens to the main character at the film's end. So I would give Anna Karenina, I give it 3 out of 4 stars. Not a spectacular movie, but definitely worth seeing if you come across it.
Alrighty then. So let's move on to Amour. Which is obviously French for the word love. And this is a movie that, as I said before, this is a movie that is a be careful what you wish for kind of movie. And by that I mean, how many times have you ever sat down and watched a movie and you say to yourself, now that's not how it would happen in real life? Or how many times have you ever said, man, I wish they'd just make a movie that was really like real life? That's what they did right here.
I agree, definitely.
This movie is almost exactly how a situation would play out. These are two people who are... I had to kind of go to Wikipedia to figure out what the husband was. Apparently they were both music teachers. And...
At least she was. I don't know if he was or not.
Well, yeah,
he might
according
have been.
To the
he
plot
was.
Line here, it says Anne is married to George or Georges or whatever. Both are retired music teachers in their 80s. Basically, it's an elderly retired couple. They clearly love one another. She for sure was a music teacher, and actually had the honor of teaching someone who goes on to become a piano virtuoso. By the his name in the movie is Alexander. He's played by a gentleman named Alexander Thérard. This guy happens to be, in real life, a French concert pianist. So he basically plays himself in the movie, but just with kind of if this lady had been his teacher instead of the person who in real life is his teacher. Or was his teacher. She ends up having a stroke, a micro stroke. They go to get it checked out. It's a blood clot. They do a surgery. Surgery goes poorly. She's paralyzed on the right hand side. And so how does this couple cope with this terrible scenario that's happened? And that's all the movie is. That's it. It's just this situation and how it plays out. They have a daughter. You know, she's married, but she's got marital problems just like regular people do. And that's it. The movie goes, and here's why, because it's a good movie. The characters are well acted. The writing is simple, but not dumbed down. It is well directed. Unfortunately, it is exactly what would happen in real life. So, especially if you've gone through something similar, I think it would truly, in this case, hit too close to home. The biggest problem with this movie, though, is that in its zeal to capture true life as it happens, it comes across more as still life on a canvas. And I just think it is about 100 minutes too long. This is a movie that this could have been done as a short film. It could have been 30 minutes, and it could have been just as good. Actually, it would have been better, because you wouldn't have had the mundaneness of real life overly done in your face. It's not just, oh look, let me cut to a shot of brushing teeth. It's let's watch all 3.5 minutes of somebody brush their teeth, for example, because I don't want to give away too much of the movie for people who may want to see this movie. They have lunch, so you watch them have lunch. It's really kind of boring. They do these kinds of things throughout the whole movie. And what really the only thing that really bothered me is when they would purposely chop it up. She has more than one stroke in this movie, and you're left wondering where the other strokes fit in. They just then come back and announce it later on. There's another scene in the movie where he, you know, just like real people, he has to hire help. He has to get some nurses. He starts off with one, goes to two, and then fires the second nurse for mistreating his wife. Well, the only thing they show in the movie that could even possibly allude to anything is the second nurse
violently brushing her hair.
It wasn't even violently. Yeah, it was maybe a little rough, but you know, sometimes hair gets tangled. You know, she did not appear to be going out of her way to cause distress. She even tried to, you know, keep her involved there. You look pretty. Let's take a look at yourself. Blah blah blah.
But it was how she was. Yeah, but it was how she was saying it. How she was. You know, how she was doing it. Just kind of like, eh. Well, I mean, not really taking into consideration the situation of things. I mean, that's what I got out of it.
I don't know. Well, again, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, that's not abuse. I don't. Okay, whatever. I guess if the worst thing in my life is that I grow up and become paralyzed or something, and someone has to brush my hair hard, I think that's probably okay. You know. So again, but it just kind of cuts. If that's the worst thing ever in the world, then you know. And maybe he's purposely too picky because he loves his wife and he thinks that's abuse, and that's okay too. I guess I don't know. But, so the movie's good. It's just way, way, way too. So I'll give it 3 stars out of 5.
Okay, I love the movie. I thought, you know, it's kind of like with you don't need the 4K TVs, the 48 frames per second movies to make anything feel like real life when you can just watch a more and. It just feels like you're watching actually two people's lives just playing out in front of you, and I kind of like what you said about like watching a painting, and it what you're actually seeing is something that's more still life than really anything that's moving along. And though I mean I kind of agree with it, but this movie to me just hits home on many different levels. Just seeing how my grandparents act with each other, how they treat each other, how I know my grandfather would do anything. Well, not to the extent of what this guy does with his wife at the end of the movie, but I could just see how they act with each other. And as an older couple, they don't have the uppity life or a lot of exciting things that are, you know, to do or happening around them as their, I guess, their kids would have going around them, or how, like you and I, we have a lot of stuff going on, but they don't use computers, they don't use Facebook, they enjoy the piano with their, you know, the grand piano they have. I mean, that's kind of the centerpiece of their house, pretty much, is this beautiful piano. They read books, and they discuss events with each other. He reads the newspaper to her. They every meal they spend together. So they just spend every waking minute, I guess, since they've been retired, together and being in love with one another and sharing stories and just sharing things. And I just loved how he says that he wants to tell her a story, and she, you know, basically he hasn't shared every single story about him to her. And it just kind of shows the love about it and how she can kind of joke with him about it, like, you know, maybe I don't want to know about you. Maybe I don't want to know any more about you. Maybe I just like you the way you are now. Maybe you'll say something that's going to ruin her image. And, you know, it's just really kind of cute. And, yeah, the movie's 2 hours. And you do see things like brushing your teeth, brushing their teeth, you know, like that playing out. But it's how each one plays out after something happening in the scene before it. And within that, you see the character change. You see the frustration growing between the two. You see how he acts with his daughter when his daughter comes up and she gets freaked out about seeing her mom, you know, after having the stroke and not being able to talk, and who's kind of gone a little senile is not the right word, but just kind of losing it, which comes in part of having a stroke and being confused and not sure where you're going. And but then the two of them, they have that, they have those moments together where they sing together. He teaches her to, you know, to sing a song, to use her mouth again, to use her hands again, or try to use her hands again and try to sing a song. And it just, you know, it, to me, it just captured just many moments just beautifully. And I don't know, I guess I just didn't find the movie boring. And I found it to be something quite charming and quite haunting and quite just oddly romantic, and wishing I see more people around today with love like this for, you know, for their partner or with their partner, to where they would go to such lengths to keep them home with them when they can't eat or drink or walk on their own.
All right, fair enough. So how many stars out of 5 would you give it?
I'd give it 5. I'd definitely give it 5.
Okay, fair enough. So then let's move on to Flight. Flight. Here was a movie that, for me, was really good. I thought it was a good movie. It was a solid movie. This is a 4-star movie. The first half of this movie, I didn't even realize an hour had gone by. Second half of this movie definitely felt like the second half of this movie. it felt like the back 3/4 of the movie, I guess. I don't know. For me, like I said, the pacing is great, the story is great, how it works out is great. John Goodman is by far and away my favorite character in this movie. And I mean, the line, "Yo, CeeLo, get the door," was
I was just about to say that.
Was fantastic. And it just, I don't know, to me, it's a good movie because it's well done, it's well executed, got good, you know, good cinematography, the special effects are great, all the characters are good, the acting's there. It's just, I've seen it. It's your standard redemption story. You know, some guy has problem X and overcomes problem X through major event Y to denouement Z of what happened after the major event Y. So it's just, I've seen it all before. It's not that it's poorly done. It's not, there's nothing wrong with this movie. I don't think it deserves it. It is a good movie, don't get me wrong, it is a good movie, but it's all been done before. And there's almost nothing stand out about this film. And when I say almost nothing, there is one bright spot to this. There is a character. There's a character that I call the linchpin character. And the linchpin character to me is a character that's not in every movie, because if every movie had one, there wouldn't ever be a bad movie. And the first person that I ever discovered, or the first character that I ever discovered that was truly a linchpin character, was the taxi driver in the movie Harvey. And subsequently, when I saw stage productions of Harvey, it's even better. And this is a character on screen for one scene, or on stage for one scene only, more or less dominates the scene while he's there, or she's there, and then is gone. You don't see him before or after. And the best part of it is that they're not necessary to the scene, but they're the key to the whole thing. And that, in this movie, is the, quote, gaunt young man, played by James Badge Dale. Shortly after the plane crash incident thing that Denzel Washington has emerged as a hero from, initially, he's recovering in the hospital, and he's a smoker, so he has to break away to get a cigarette. He busts into the stairwell where he meets the other lead of the movie, the female lead, played by Kelly Riley, and who is a recovering heroin addict. which is why she's in the stairwell smoking already as he comes in there. So they kind of meet. The conversation's not really going anywhere until this gaunt young man who basically has cancer comes up from the cancer ward and bums a cigarette from them as well, because, you know, he was worried that his cancer might get cancer. And, you know, so as soon as he said that line, I was like, okay, this guy's going to be good. And he basically puts the whole thing into perspective, because everything is meant to happen in the world of this movie. And for me, I think that as well. Everything is meant to happen. Nothing is left to chance. And if you want to call it God, if you want to call it a creator, if you want to call it some malevolent force, or if you just want to call it kismet, everything happens for a reason. Nothing is by accident. And that's really the key to this whole movie. And what you do with what happens is what makes the difference. So this guy, you know, so that was the standout thing for me for this movie. I will say the other thing, however, that is worth note is that anybody who ever watched My Name is Earl, and you might remember the girl Catalina, the stripper.
Oh, yeah.
You finally get to see her naked, and I mean everything.
Within the first 30 seconds of the movie.
30 seconds of the movie. Oh, my God. So if you've been waiting for that, fans of My Name is Earl, it was well worth the wait. I gotta say. So there.
And then
go.
Matt, we all know Matt now gives the movie two boings.
Yeah. If I could rate movies on nudity, 5 stars just for her. But we're not going that route. Good movie. Seen it all before. 4 stars.
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie. I thought Denzel Washington deserves the Best Actor nod. The nomination, he was really good, and I'm really happy to see him in a solid movie. I don't think he's really been in a. I cannot think of the last Denzel Washington movie that I really liked since maybe Man on Fire or Deja Vu. Taking of Pelham was all right. I didn't see Unstoppable here. It's supposed to be pretty good, but it's a fun movie. It's an entertaining movie. I mean. What kind of this is one of those kind of feel goody type of movies in a way, to whereas there's not really that much of a risk, to whereas with like Amour, you're kind of risking your emotion while watching that movie, to where you can either cry or be severely depressed while watching it. Or that can be said with like watching The Grey. I mean, there's stuff you're putting something at risk while you watch the movie, which can heighten your entertainment value, or you can either hate the movie because it was a complete letdown. But kind of like, I guess that's like how you were with Buried in a way, to where you risked a lot, but it let you down. But with this movie, there's not really a risk there. It's a no risk movie that was entertaining, that had fine performances. If I really had to say anything negative about the movie, I'm just sick and tired of hearing the same music in it that I've heard in a million other movies. But other than that, that's it.
All right, well, how many stars would you give it then?
Out of 5? I'd give it 4.
Okay, we're definitely going to have to do the Deep Impact Armageddon thing. We're agreeing way too much here. Even our disagreement on Amour wasn't really that bad. We're going to have a knockdown dragout, Tim.
Deep Impact Armageddon. Well, we might have that knockdown dragout thing here with what I actually called Live Free or Die Hard last week. I meant A Good Day to Die Hard this week.
Okay, well, let's see what happens. Okay, now. A Good Day to Die Hard. I gotta say, I enjoyed the movie. I think I gave it 3 or 3.5 stars out of 5. But again, is it the best action movie ever? No. Is it the best movie in the franchise? No. Are you a fan? If you're a fan of the franchise, are you gonna enjoy this movie? Yes. and that's really all you can ask. I think at the end of the movie, I pretty much said, because, okay, in the first movie, he repairs the relationship with his wife. In the second movie, it seems to be okay. In the third movie, it's all fallen apart. He's lost his entire family, it seems, again. In the fourth movie, he repairs his relationship with his daughter. And in the fifth movie, he's, you know, trying to repair the relationship with his son. And I'm like, at the end of this movie, I'm sitting there going, you know, I guess they need to do one more movie so that, you know, he can save the wife one last time and then everybody's all happy. But I really don't want there to be another movie. This is kind of it. It's time for Bruce Willis to stop saving the world.
That's why he's doing all the Red movies.
Yeah. So John McClane has to, he believes his son to be in trouble, deep in trouble with trying to kill people and all sorts of stuff in Russia. He goes to try and see if he can do anything to help his son and at least attempt to repair the relationship when he literally stumbles into a huge covert CIA operation that is actually being headed by his son. So, and then of course, they have to blow everything up and save the world. So, it's a Die Hard movie. There are references to the previous films, which was nice. The car chase scene at the beginning of the movie is so ridiculously over the top. But I mean, what are you going to do? He launched a car into a helicopter in the previous movie, so they've got to top that somehow. Other than that, you know, I got to see a pre-screening of it. So it was literally me and four or five other guys, and we're just sitting there. And so my experience was, it's me and four other guys. We actually got to do the D-Box technology, which was cool. I've never tried that before. And I got to say, if you can do it for free, cool. If you can't do it for free, pass. But yeah, so we were getting there and seeing it and everything, and we got to call out. It was like, you know, five guys sitting in the living room. It's just, you know, the TV, instead of being, you know, 55-inch, was 80 feet. And so that made it a lot more fun to pick out everything that was funny or over the top or ridiculous and be able to comment on it and actually talk about it. Really just kind of endeared the experience to me. So I have to say, I enjoyed the movie. In terms of it just being the Die Hard franchise, it's not the best Die Hard, and it's not the best action movie. But if you go in expecting Die Hard-esque stuff, you're going to get Die Hard-esque stuff. And I can tell you this right now, Bruce Willis, because he is the best actor of the three, of them being Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, and Bruce Willis, he's able to carry the acting a little bit better, and it makes the movie that much more enjoyable. He's also, I think, aged the best of all three. So yeah, so I gave it 3 or 3.5 stars, within the realm of it being, if you're a fan of the franchise, then you'll be a fan, and that's what I have to say.
All right, so I wanted to throw up so hardcore within the first 10 minutes of this movie that I, like, okay, to be positive, there were aspects of the movie I enjoyed, especially after the big car chase, over-the-top car chase scene at the beginning. It was entertaining, and then it got stupid whenever they decided to go to Chernobyl, where apparently there is still no radioactive activity going on there, even though everybody else is wearing radioactive gear, but the two heroes were not, because I guess Americans are protected within their American Uncle Sam blood to, you know, to get...
They loosely explain that away.
How? When he asked if...
Okay, for starters, there are tours that are currently going on now. You can actually, without any gear, go briefly and visit Chernobyl nowadays.
Yeah.
So that's how they're getting in there. And then again, they used the technology once they got inside that vault They had some whatever special technology that neutralized all the radiation.
Oh, was that the...
So they took off their suits. Because remember, the Russians were in their suits initially.
Right.
And then they took the suits off. So
they had that gas or whatever.
They loosely explained it away. I'm sure that that's not how it would go in real life, but I don't think we need to combine Amor and a good day.
That would be a good day to Amor. Okay, so let's go back to that car chase scene at the beginning. It's in Moscow through traffic, which, for one thing, it said there's a lot of traffic in Moscow, yet they could still have a car chase scene, which was kind of contradictory in many ways. But that's looking at it with a little you know, in a fine print matter. But the movie just... The camera work just jolts you around. It zooms in. It does these really weird, like, very retro... it could be cool effect where it, like, randomly zooms in on a character. Like, whenever they pop out of the water at the end of the movie, they kind of zoom in on them. But it doesn't fit in this movie because every other time when there's action going around, especially during the car chase scene, the camera's all over the place. So you see these truly remarkable stunts in these car crashes, which... I've never seen anything so cool in my life. However, I still didn't see it because I couldn't tell what the fuck was going on at all, because everything is just moving so fast. You, whenever it's like a close-up on a car, or whenever there's a shot of a car or a shot of a person driving the vehicle, it's usually like right up on the grill, or it's like from the shoulders up. I mean, you really don't see any other body part in the entire movie. Just shoulders up, unless they're falling. Whenever they're falling, you'll see some legs and maybe a hand every once in a while. But, I mean, that's just really what got me, is that it just induced nausea. And then with all the times where, like, cars and these big armored vehicles are just crashing and rolling over these pedestrian vehicles, I bet that body count, like, tripled the number of body count that John McClane has ever taken in any other Die Hard movie, because it is said that in all the other Die Hard movies, John McClane has killed, I think, 52 people, is the rumor. And this is pre A Good Day to Die Hard. I am pretty sure that many civilians died in the first 30 minutes of the movie. It's got to be.
Yeah, but he didn't kill them. So that counts, right?
What's that? I guess, but it was just, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, it's just kind of like that thing where it's like the
Wait,
truck will go
how
over.
Did John McClane have killed 52 people in Die Hard? There was only like 9 bad guys.
No, I mean in all the Die Hard movies before A Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, combined.
Yeah, combined. Yeah, okay. not just in the first movie, but like in the car chase scene. You know, they're like, you have like this heroic, like, dun, 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 whenever, like, the good guy succeeds. But as he's succeeding, he's, like, driving a truck over the top of cars that are in traffic, like, squashing people. And he's just saying, sorry, ma'am, excuse me, ma'am. And he's completely squashing the cars, which is crazy. And I need more, the director. I really like the remake of The Omen with Liev Schreiber. I mean, what happened to his the spunk and his vision? To whereas, like, with Dredd, had these cool visual moments where whenever people would take the drug that's in the movie, everything would go into, oh yeah, slow-mo. Everything would go into slow motion, and you see these cool effects. Well, the same thing kind of happens in this movie, to whereas if whenever there is a slow-motion action scene, or part of an action scene, usually at the tail end of the action scene, it's very visually stunning and... oh, gorgeous, but the rest of the movie is butt-ass ugly to look at, with the grays and the washed-out colors, and... I don't know, I guess that added to my nauseated feeling of the movie, is, you know, the colors and, like, the really crazy zooming in and zooming out, and the camera just moving all about. So I was pretty damn sad at the end of this movie, because I just really wanted, you know, just wanted something more exciting in a way to be able to enjoy it, for it to actually play out to where it's not nonstop crazy car chases or crazy action set pieces with limited storyline happening. You know? I mean, there's just not really... I guess it's one thing to say that I didn't buy the movie given what the movie is and what the movie is about, but like with you look at Live Free or Die Hard, which is the last movie, whereas it had comedic moments, it was funny, it was a little bit longer, but it was more of a it was just like an action movie with these cool big set piece action scenes, to whereas it evoked some sort of like ooh ah type of look to it, to whereas like something would happen, I guess like the famous part of it where, or actually the one of the more ooh-ah famous scenes is whenever they're doing the car chase scene in Washington, I think, and a car flips over and it looks like the car is about to land right on the two actors, until I guess it's like two other cars block the car that's flipping up in the air to landing on top of them. And that is such a cool scene because everybody thought that the car was going to land on the two, but it doesn't. It was stopped. So it's kind of like a breathtaking type of visual, you know, visual treat there. And unfortunately, this movie has none of those whatsoever. It doesn't have any of those like visual, like ooh, cool type of moments, because it's all spoiled in the trailer. I mean, every cool visual look and visual cue of the movie you've seen in the trailer, which kind of sucks. Blah.
Alright, fine. So you didn't like it, so what are you going to give it? 2 stars?
Out of 5? I'll give it 1.
Yeah. Alright. This is when we're really missing Mikey, because I would love to hear what he said. What he really had to say about this. So, alright. Well, I guess that kind of wraps things up for us then. Do we want to try and argue over our Oscar picks, or do we just want to?
How about
best picture?
Best picture.
Give me your pick for best picture.
I'm gonna have to go with. It's hard because I think it's gonna be Argo, but I would love for Silver Linings Playbook to win.
Okay, I would love for it to be Argo, but I think given the politics involved, Lincoln's gonna. Remember when he did Schindler's mm-hmm. List? Same thing, you know. The man. Virtually everything the man touches turns to gold. He brings blockbuster after blockbuster after blockbuster, and he hardly ever gets nominated. And it's usually when he finally gets a serious nomination for something like Schindler's List, or in this case, Lincoln, he wins. So I think it's going to go to him. I would prefer to Argo to win it. I think Silver Linings Playbook was really good, but I think Argo was better. So, there you go. All right, actor in a leading role.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Same, yes, same. Actress in a leading role.
That's a toughie. I really want it's probably going to be Jennifer Lawrence, but I would love to see the little girl from... Beast of the Southern Wild to get it.
I can agree with that. I can agree. I think it would be nice if she won, because she did do such a good mm-hmm. job. However, I think it's going to be Jennifer Lawrence. But Jennifer Lawrence, I think, also did an amazing job.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So, actor in a supporting role?
I would love... I want Robert De Niro to get it, but it might be Christoph Waltz.
I both believe it will be Christoph Waltz and want it to be Christoph Waltz.
Okay.
Christoph Waltz. Actress in a supporting
role? Anne Hathaway. Man. Yeah. Yeah. How about you?
I don't know. This is where I will freely admit not having seen The Sessions and not having seen The Master is hurting me, because I don't think any of the remaining three. I saw Silver Linings Playbook, Limas, and Lincoln, and I don't think any of them deserve it.
You ought to check out Master, because I'd be curious to see what you think about it.
Definitely. Well, I meant to see it. I wanted to see it. I like both Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman, so I mean, and I like Amy Adams too, but I mean, I wanted to see it for those two actors. Mm-hmm. So this really hurts me in this particular category. I guess, I don't know. They're talking up so much crap about it, I suppose Anne Hathaway will probably get it, but I guess if I have to pick only based on what I've seen, I suppose I would prefer Jackie Weaver get it, but I don't know. That's a toughie for me.
Yeah.
animated feature film?
I would love Paranorman to get it, but it's probably going to be Brave.
I would both love... I both want Brave to win and Believe to win. The other four just... they just can't touch
Believe in Brave. I disagree.
Cinematography.
Life of Pi.
Or do you have to go with Skyfall?
Only Skyfall! We're gonna do some Skyfall. Ooh, shit. It's gotta be either Les Mis or Anna Karenina, because they're both period piece movies.
Really? The Snow White and the Huntsman, I thought... I mean, I read some articles and stuff on the actual costumes and stuff like that, and I don't know, I think it deserved its nomination.
I mean, I'm sure it deserved it. I actually watched it yesterday. Just to watch it. It's also nominated for special effects, which it does have some excellent visuals to it.
And then I'm gonna go. Let's see here. Let's do one more. Directing.
Spielberg. Although I want Life of Pi to win so much, and I and for special effects I say Life of Pi. Skyfall.
Visual effects, there we go. Ooh, I don't know. Hobbit. I think Hobbit could give it a run for its
true
money. I just want to know. Writing, adapted screenplay?
Adaptive screenplay.
Your choices are Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Life of Pi, Lincoln, and Silver Linings.
That's so hard. Silver really Linings, it's probably the Silver Linings Playbook, but I would love Life of Pi, because I still say Life of Pi is my favorite movie of 2012. Like, I cannot believe how
I think
phenomenal that movie turned out to be.
I think I'm gonna go with this is a really hard one for me as well. I would like for Argo to win, but I would also like for Lincoln to win. I think Lincoln could get it.
Yeah, because we're America.
Okay. America. Alright, writing, original screenplay. So we have Amour, Django Unchained, Flight, Moonrise Kingdom, and Zero Dark Thirty.
Django Unchained, yeah. Moonrise Kingdom, though, could give it a run for its money.
True, but I don't know. I think Django Unchained is that important.
Django!
Okay, well, there we go. Look, no blood drawn either. I really think we're going to have to seriously consider. Guys, we may have a special episode.
Whenever I come to Houston, I might just come up to you and just slap you and see if
that... should totally be when we do it, because if we're in the same room, it'll be really hard to, you know, not want to kill each other.
That's true.
And I don't care what you say. We're going to go watch some cheesy movie or something while you're here, too. We're going to go... We got to go up to the movie house. Where we saw a zombie.
Oh, yeah, at River Oaks.
Yeah, we gotta go to River Oaks.
Yeah.
See something, I don't care. I just wanna go there and have some drinks with you and go watch a movie.
It's a date.
Oh, yay, I'm so excited. Alright, well, cool. Well, then, I guess that's gonna wrap it up. Three squared for next week. Okay, so this one, this is kind of a weird one for us, but we're gonna go with it. Next week, we're gonna pick the movies that we think were or are still controversial for their time. So an easy example is going to be Passion of the Christ. It may be one that gets chosen, but just to give you an idea of a very controversial film. So, you know, Fahrenheit 9/11 or whatever. So these are the kinds of movies we're going to be looking at and talking about. Next week we're going to be covering, we're going to take a break from the movie theater, guys, so if you guys have been wearing out your wallets trying to keep up with us, we understand. So we're going to do all Netflix streaming next week, take a break. Jeff Who Lives at Home, The Raven, and The Wild Geese. Oh, look, go watch. We're also going to start looking at a couple of new segments that we may introduce in the coming weeks. One that we're looking at is did it age well? And basically the idea is, now that we've got like theatrical re-releases of like Top Gun and what have you, are there other movies that were blockbusters or massive award-winning movies in their day that are still good today. So if you have suggestions for that, or if you think that there are movies that we should talk about, please make sure to let us know so we can try that out soon. And another one that I think we're going to start going with is I'm the Only One Who Liked It. And basically, this is a movie that is generally considered to be bad, commercially, critically, both. But you like it anyway.
That happens to me so much.
And so I'm going to give you one of my personal favorites in this genre, which is Hudson Hawk. Totally bombed at the box office. People hate that movie. Critically, it didn't. But I really enjoyed it. I guess maybe I was just in a happy-go-lucky kind of mood and wanted something zany and different, and that just happened to fit right that day. So I personally love that movie. It made me learn the lyrics to Swing on a Star. So, because, you know, Bing Crosby wasn't already badass. Anyway, so those are some segment ideas we're going to be toying with and hopefully bringing to you in the future, and we'd always love your input on that. Tim, is there anything else to add?
Skyfall, this is just a skyfall, we're skyfalling.
And while he serenades us in the background, skyfall. I guess we'll do the spiel. Mikey, come back, we miss you.
Skyfall.
Yes, falling Mikey could from not join the sky, us. He got himself a new puppy, and apparently the puppy is needing some veterinary care. So, in accordance with the Humane Society, we want to make sure that our staff are able to take care of the things they need to take care of to take care of their puppies. So hopefully he'll be back next week. Thanks again for listening, everybody. The music that you've been listening to is, as always, provided to us by our amazing partners here.
Skyfall by Adele.
It's actually going to be Cries of Solace, as much as I would love to have Adele on the show. We are going to, let Cries of Solace continue to take care of us. You can check them out at CriesOfSolace.com. You can always check Reverb Nation as well for Houston. Look up Cries of Solace. You can go to Facebook or MySpace.com, /CriesOfSolace. And interesting news about Cries of Solace, they have a show coming up at a legendary rock club here in Houston called Numbers. They've got a show coming up on the 28th. So if you're in the Houston area and you think that's something that's worth checking out, please go do so. And as far as we're concerned, you can follow us on Twitter at the SLScast. Send us an email to the SLScast@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook as well, searching the SLScast, and then go to our website if nothing else fits your fancy at SLScast.com. So you can always check us out on iTunes as well if you, haven't done that already. Subscribe there. So we... thank you all for listening. Hope to hear from y'all soon. And peace out, homies and homies.
Cheers, guys. And galliettes.
Later.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.